It's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are coming off the high of Guardians of the Galaxy from last week, a movie that people are saying saved the summer. I don't know if that's true. As dismal as the box office has been this summer domestically, there hasn't been a massive bomb, and there's plenty of money being made overseas. So let's not start having bake sales to save Hollywood right now. But we are coming off Guardians of the Galaxy to hit the August skids with movies like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The 100-Foot Journey, Step Up All In, Into the Storm, and After, a smaller film. We will also be talking about today some news, some box office predictions, the trailer park, and of course the world famous DVD roundup. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on the interwebs by emailing me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, Ron Burgundy, thank you so much for leading us into this. We have some news, and let's just start with the superhero news. This is where Hollywood is going. Right now, we thought maybe the superhero films were losing steam. They're not. They are becoming the franchise design of not just Marvel, which is of course owned by Disney, but also DC, which is owned by Warner. And you also have Sony with Spider-Man franchise and Fox with the X-Men franchise and the Fantastic Four that just recently wrapped. I think they just wrapped shooting this week. If you look at the big ones, Marvel and DC, there are 40 DC and Marvel's movies that are going to be hitting the theaters in the next 6 years. That's just from DC and Marvel. We're not talking about fringe comic book titles from Dark Horse or anything like that. Now, not all of these are from Marvel Studios necessarily, because we also have like Wolverine and the X-Men movies. But Marvel and DC have basically put their stakes in the sand for release dates. And it's not so bad in 2015. There's only three in 2015 of this group. You've got Avengers 2, Fantastic Four, and then Ant-Man. 2016 is where it starts to get thicker. And in fact, another minor news story is Batman versus Superman flinched. If you were following release dates, because of course they set these release dates months, if not years in the future. And Captain America took May 6th, 2016, which was moved there. But Batman versus Superman had taken that as well after it was delayed from a 2015 release. Well, they said, people are saying they can't have these two movies opening on the same day. They're just too big and they draw from the same audience. Finally, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice moved into the March frame, March 25th, 2016. Now this is significant and here's why. It used to be you'd release the big superhero movies, the Superman, the Batman, the Avengers, the Iron Man type movies in the summer. You can do them in the winter, like Thor 2 being released in November. But generally the two big movie release times are summer and Christmas. Or the Christmas frame. Christmas spills all the way into the beginning of November. And of course, summer starts at first weekend of May, even though everyone's in school and it's not officially summer yet. This is a big deal because the Superman and Batman movie is being released in spring break time. And usually that time is reserved for smaller movies, movies that can't compete in the big summer frame against the big tent poles. But they're putting a tent pole in March. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, this is because they want to expand the summer movie season. And I guess that's true to an extent. I think there's something more to it. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to spread out their tent poles. And I don't think this has anything to do with as much Captain America, even Captain America doing well as an April release, or the Fast and Furious movies doing well as April releases. I think it has to do with the fact that, like, Hunger Games did extremely well in March. The first one. It made like $400 million and it was a March release. Or Lego Movie, which is at this point still the second highest grossing movie domestically of this year, was a February release. I think the studios are saying there's ability to put tent poles anywhere, not just in the summer. So you're not cramming them all in the summertime, and so you're not getting like superhero after superhero after superhero movie. The movies that are going to suffer the most are the movies like the 300 sequel, 300 Rise of the Empire. These movies that couldn't survive in a big tentpole release summer, so they throw them into the spring, and they do pretty well. it's going to get a little more crowded. So that's actually it's a big deal to release a Superman or Batman movie that early. These have always been, going back to the 70s, they have been summer or Christmas movies. But, you know, once you get into 2017, I mean, it's just like, what is it, 6, 7, 8 movies of just Marvel characters and DC characters. So it's going to be very, very busy. The bubble will burst at some point, and not everything's going to do well. At some point, Marvel's going to have a flop. They don't have one yet, but they will at some point. I don't know when it's going to happen. Another interesting news story is this spins into the superheroes, because there's Spider-Man. There was announced that Sony's planning on doing an unannounced, untitled female character from the Spider-Man franchise. A lot of people are thinking Spider-Woman. And that came right on the heels of the Ghostbusters reboot is now being directed by Paul Feig, who wants to bring in an all-female cast. I think the Ghostbusters, they just need to leave that alone. That's a thoroughly 80s series and a thoroughly 80s movie. I don't know if it'll translate to today, regardless of the sex of the characters. A lot of people are saying, this is great. They're now having movies about women, and that's good. I mean, I'm all for that. I think Lucy was a better example of that. I think Lucy is how you need to do it, where you say, let's make a movie, and this is what it's going to be. Oh, yeah, it happens to star a woman, but who cares? It's an action movie. And let's release it. The thing I worry about with what's starting to turn into a fad, at least at this point in development, is saying, oh, let's make a female blockbuster. The Expendables with a female cast, Spider-Man with a female cast, Ghostbusters with a female cast. They're not treating it like it's a real decision to make a movie. They're searching for a gimmick almost. And you shouldn't be casting women as a gimmick. The reason being is if the movies bomb, they'll stop making them. Look at what happened to Melissa McCarthy's. She did a movie that's made many times its budget over with Tammy, but it wasn't the monster success that her other films were. And now people are going, oh, she's done. So, I mean, is she going to struggle to find a starring movie now? Probably not, because she'll probably be in Ghostbusters, because her and Paul Feig get along pretty well. So that's my only concern with this, that it's turning into a trend as a fad and not just, hey, let's make a movie. The final news announcement in dumb title news, which is, of course, coming off of Dawn of Justice. Terminator 5 is now called Terminator Genisys. Now, that sounds like a cool name until you see how it's spelled. Genisys. Dumb. Just dumb. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's move into the trailer park. Real quick, we're going to blast through a couple of these. The first one is The Theory of Everything, which opens on November 7th, telling the life of scientist Stephen Hawking.
I'm a cosmologist.
What's that?
I study the marriage of space and time.
The perfect couple.
One never knows from where the next great leap forward is going to come, or from whom.
It's called motor neuron disease.
Don't realize what lies ahead. This is going to be a very heavy defeat.
We're going to fight this illness together.
I'm a huge fan of Stephen Hawking. I'm a huge fan of science. I think he's got a fascinating story, and it's amazing that it's taken him this long to make this big of a movie with him. It's a heartbreaking story, but there's also this caveat of his life that he was kind of wasting his time as sort of just a guy who was going around playing the field. And when he got sick, that's when he really turned inward and focused. And we would not have the mind of Stephen Hawking had he not contracted this horrible disease. So it's a fascinating look at his life. I'm very much looking forward to this on November 7th, more so than Interstellar. The next one is Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Very different movie, obviously. Opening on December 25th, because what says Christmas like a raunchy hot tub comedy?
Man, that hot tub really turned it all around.
Yeah, I don't feel like anything bad's gonna happen.
Dude, he's been shot.
He needs more time.
Then we'll give him more time.
Here it is once again.
We gotta stop the killer before he shoots Lou.
We get blackout drunk, we wake up back in time. Don't mess with the winning formula, huh?
How far back do we go?
2024.
We went 10 years into the future.
We're here to stop your murder.
Like Terminator.
You think everything is like Terminator?
Because everything is like Terminator.
This looks funny. The first movie was such a bizarre movie. I'm kind of looking forward to this one because it's just an excuse to make more money and be more crass. I mean, the trailer itself is R-rated on its own. Hot Tub Time Machine 2 looks pretty interesting. I will probably be sneaking away from Christmas dinner to check that one out because I can't imagine in any universe they're going to screen this. That's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The 100-Foot Journey and step up all in.
Because we can, can, can!
So sexy it hurts.
Kevin Carr from Fat Guys at the Movies coming at you. We are going to be talking about our first films on the chopping block today. The first one is The 100-Foot Journey. An Indian family moves to the south of France and opens a restaurant across the street, literally 100 feet. From a fancy French cuisine establishment.
100 feet across the street, the restaurant has a Michelin star. The President of France dines there.
Can Mr. President order murg masala, cooked the way Hassan cooks?
People here don't eat those things.
They have never tried. Now they shall.
Begin!
Yay! Is it a wedding party over there?
A funeral. The death of good taste.
If your food is anything like your music, I suggest you turn it down.
I will turn the music down, but I will turn the heat up.
This film is most famous for being a book. Also for the fact that Oprah Winfrey and Steven Spielberg got together to produce it. At the screening that they showed us, they had the two of them giving sort of that pre-show announcement of, hey, thanks for watching the movie. Go talk about it. All that kind of stuff that they tell people who go see free movies. This is a food movie, and what's funny, I was recently on a show called Eating Disorder, which is a fun show, from Brooklyn. One of the hosts is a friend of the show, Crazy Legs Conti, from competitive eating fame. And this film is one of the films we kind of talked about. We talked about food movies on that show, and I realized in sort of doing research for it, there's a lot of food movies I haven't seen. This is directed by Lasse Hanström, I think that's how you say his name, who did Chocolat. And there's a lot of these food movies that have just sort of escaped me, which is weird because I love food. I mean, look at me. Look at the name of the show. I'm a fat guy at the movies. I love food. I love movies. It seems to be this perfect storm of awesomeness. But it seems to be that the real food movies, a lot of them tend to be very heavy, dramatic, beautiful type films. And while I've seen some like Under the Tuscan Sun and, you know, Ratatouille, is a very food-driven film, and it's a cartoon. This one is also about food, but it's also about the drama, based on an international bestseller, and it's counter-programming to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is the kind of movie you can take your mom to instead of the mom taking the kids to. And it's a perfectly charming film, and I love Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren is a beautiful woman, and she is fantastic in this movie. And the film is so food porny at times. Still not as food porny as the peach pie scene in Labor Day that came out back in January. But it could have been shot with Instagram because there's just so much just sort of the passion and the beauty of food. And it works for this because the Indian food, I love Indian food. I love sort of like the exotic nature and taste and texture of Indian food. I'm not a huge French food fan, but they make it look very beautiful. And it's shot, of course, in the south of France and looks gorgeous. Being based on a book, sometimes doing an adaptation means you have to sacrifice because a book is a book and a movie is a movie. And in as much as people like to go, oh, the book's better, snobs, shut up. I believe that a book and a movie are two totally different entities, and actually bridging that gap and making one turn into the other is a monumental feat and not easy to do. Because when you adapt a book can be 400, 500, 600 pages long, and it can have all multiple storylines and in-depth characters and changes and go places that a movie cannot take you and do it in such a way that is impossible to translate to films. That's where you get movies that they say are unfilmable movies. And not that this was one of them, but the point being is there's a lot in the book, and when you translate it into a two-hour movie, you have to make sacrifices. And some things also don't play perfectly because you can't get into the minds of people in a movie. So I say all that because it's not really my cup of tea, but it's very charming up until the last 20, 30 minutes when it really literally ruined it for me. What's so problematic about something like this is I can't go into why specifically I just hated the ending of this film or the last bit of the film because a lot of it's spoilers. And I don't want to drop any spoilers, but it felt like the story was over and then they continued it. Because I'm sure there's all this in the book. The problem is the movie story was over because the movie is about the restaurants and the family clashing with Helen Mirren's character. It's not about the chef. And then they say, oh, this is about the chef, so let's move on and finish his story. So it just felt like it was overstaying its welcome. It got really annoying at times because of that. And I'm like, well, this movie, we just spent an hour and a half with the family and the father who runs the restaurant and Helen Mirren who runs the other restaurant. And then suddenly we're just going to abandon him and wrap up this guy's storyline, which becomes extremely sexist and trendy and jerky at times. I just didn't like it. And so here's a great example where this movie has snatched a kind of sucks review out of the jaws of a kind of rocks review. So in the end, I have to say this movie kind of sucks. And it's all because of the ending. If I walked out 20 minutes before it ended, I probably would have felt a lot better about it. But I just so hated the ending. And every now and then there's a movie that comes along that redeems itself at the end. But there's also movies that seal their coffin at the end. And this one did. So like I said, it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next film we're going to be talking about is Step Up All In. A dance crew enters a contest in Las Vegas, hoping to win a 3-month contract on the Strip.
This is the ultimate dance competition with the ultimate prize. The 3-year Vegas contract.
You can't enter alone.
So we're putting a crew together or what?
If we're going to be a crew, who's going to be in charge?
I am.
I see you got yourself a new crew. Y'all come to see some real dancing?
Winning, it's great. But being here, you guys, that's all I care about.
Sorry, I wanted it so bad, I didn't realize what I was losing.
This is the fifth Step Up movie, but no, don't take that as if you want to see it, you have to race out and binge watch the first four. You can go in cold to this movie and figure it out. This is not Chinatown. This is not a heavily plotted, a complex character mystery or anything like that. It's a bunch of 20-somethings trying to make it as dancers in LA because that's where dreams are supposed to happen. Just ask the 15 million people who live there whether that always happens. And there's not a whole lot to say about these movies. The people who are going to see these movies are going to see these movies because they like them. They've got fantastic dance sequences. When I went to go see it, because they didn't screen it, I had to go see it in the evening. The place was filled with, you could tell there were dance students. So they're either students that were into dance or there were groups of kids that were into dance. That's who this movie's for. That's who it's targeting. And like I said, the dance sequences are fantastic. The movie itself is pretty dumb. I mean, literally within 10 minutes, we have a dance-off rumble going on. And an awful lot of the dialogue, I'd say probably 90% of the dialogue, is just taunting each other. And you have the good dance crew, and then you had the evil dance crew, because there's always the dark side of the force. It's dumb that way. I mean, it really is. And the characters are stupid, and it's so fantastical, because like part of the storyline is the guy who's the leader and the girl who's the leader, they of course have this tenuous relationship. He wants to try this move and she doesn't want to. And then they're like on stage going, let's try it. I'm like, you never rehearse? It takes rehearsal out. It lives in this, its own little universe, sort of like Burlesque, that movie with Christina Aguilera and Cher a couple of years ago, where it's an impossibility for this thing to happen. But it's cool dancing. It is the dance version of Transformers. That's really what it is. I mean, for that level, it's okay, but I still have to say it kind of sucks, because it's a dumb movie. It's not my cup of tea. And in terms of the story, there are better stories in the second and third Step Up movie. Believe it or not, I know the nuances of this series. So I'm going to have to say Step Up All In kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Into the Storm.
Shake that.
Turtle power. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Kevin Carr here. Go ninja-ing and vanilla icing into the next segment of movie reviews. Of course, today on Fat Guys of the Movies, we're going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or TMNT, if you're in the know. What's funny, I had a I had a radio host that I'd sent an email for an interview that I was doing for movie reviews, and I'd sent him TMNT was one of the movies. He had to look it up. He didn't know what it was, and I'm like, oh, you're old. Because even I remember in 1990 when the first movie came out, a friend of mine was like, are you excited for TMNT? And I'm like, what's that? Because I never listened. I was too old to appreciate the Turtles when they became well-known. They kind of came in. It's sort of like Goonies. They came in right after I would have been into them. They kind of showed up in the late 80s, but by then I was already a teenager in high school. And that was a time where people didn't watch stuff ironically. I mean, now you've got like bronies and people who watch stuff that is supposed to be outside of what you would demographically watch. And that's, you know, Powerpuff Girls and like even stuff like the Backyardigans. There are older kids that watch that. That didn't really start happening until I was older, and I was just too old to really appreciate the Turtles and read the comic books and watch the original cartoon, although I did see the movie and I thought it was okay. So I'm coming at this with a unique perspective in the sense that I don't have any sort of, there's no sacred cows in the Turtle franchise for me. We'll see if it works for me as we get into this review. We are, of course, talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the new movie. Four mutant turtles in the New York sewer team up with reporter April O'Neil to stop Shredder from a terrorist plot.
My sons, I have trained you your whole lives to protect the city above. But I fear you are not ready for its greatest threat.
You must stop Shredder.
Together, you are stronger than he can ever be.
Let's go save my brothers.
So they're aliens?
No, that's stupid. They're turtles.
Is there anything else we should know about them?
They're ninjas.
Now, I'm not going to get all original source material crazy on you because Megan Fox is not April O'Neil, not even close. At least in the original movie, I think it was Judith Hogue played April O'Neil, I think. And she kind of embodied the sort of spunky wannabe reporter April O'Neil. There's no Casey in this movie. Changing the setup a little bit, how the turtles learn ninja moves from like a book. Don't know exactly how that turns into massive, amazing ninja powers. But still, the biggest problem with this movie is, in fact, Megan Fox. She is awful. And if you listen to that trailer, she's in it for like six words. They minimized her appearance. I mean, they showed her because she's pretty, but she doesn't have very many lines in the trailers. All three trailers, I think there's six words she says or something like that. It's incredibly minimized and it's just in there for a joke. The only problem is the movie, the first half is all about Megan Fox's character and she's narrating it. I mean, not even like in a Kristen Stewart Twilight sort of way. She's just talking. There's no voiceover. She's just narrating it. And she's got this grating voice and Megan Fox is such a colossally bad actress. And I've had a lot of people say, yeah, but she's hot. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make a bold statement here. She's not that hot. And here's why. How old is Megan Fox? I mean, she's not even 30, but she's done the Rose McGowan thing with her face where she started to get cosmetic procedures done. She's getting Botox. You can tell her entire, from like her upper lip to the bottom of her eyes doesn't move. And she already starts to have that weird duck lip face that you see in women like Mary McDonnell. Is that, I think that's who it is. Who was on Grey's Anatomy and she was in Battlestar Galactica. Usually you don't see that until the woman's in their like 50s and they're trying to look younger. You shouldn't have that look when you're in your 20s or early 30s. And Megan Fox at times looks more awkward than the turtles, and the turtles do not look good in this movie. And people have been talking about this since the trailer dropped months ago. They said the turtles look weird because their faces are emulating like this very uncanny valley where it's almost too articulated and too human looking and they don't look as cartoony. I mean, the Jim Henson Creature Shop back in the 90s did fantastic turtle work in the first three movies that they did. I mean, even though the third movie was kind of stupid. And then the CGI version of the movie 7 years ago was really kind of cool too. But this is, they don't look good. I mean, the rest of it, take out their faces and they look fine. They actually look pretty cool. But once you get past the weird look of the turtles, there's some fun stuff in there. There's stuff that the 12-year-olds and the 10-year-olds in the audience are going to like. It's got, you know, the ninja moves. It's got a couple good action scenes. It's got a nice little pod racing scene. in it. What I remember, there's a big action set piece in the middle of the movie, and I remember after seeing it going, okay, that was actually really cool. So there's some fun stuff in the movie, and the ending, it's a little bit reminiscent of Transformers Dark of the Moon, but, you know, of course, there's your Michael Bay influence on it. But, I mean, it works for just a stupid turtle movie. It's just, you have to get past their weird-looking faces, and you have to slag through that first half of the movie where Megan Fox is the main character. And poor Will Arnett is stuck acting against her, and he's so brilliant as a comedian, and he just has, it's like trying to bounce a deflated basketball trying to act against Megan Fox. So no, look, I was not unentertained. As I left the movie, I was like, okay, I enjoyed that to a degree. So I'm just going to barely say it kind of rocks, but it's not a feat of any, it's sort of the best movie of the weekend kind of by default.
It kind of rocks.
All right. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next movie we're going to be talking about is Into the Storm. A string of tornadoes threaten a small town while storm chasers try to document them, and a father tries to save his kids.
Dad, help us! The building fell down on this water board again!
I gotta get my son. Can you take us? This is what you guys do for a living.
They chase. I study.
All the warning sirens are down. If a tornado's coming your way, you're not gonna know it.
Hey, guys, it's splitting.
There's another one. There's three. Four. They're everywhere!
I study storms all my life. And this one is bigger than any storm that has ever been.
This is a found footage movie. I'm going to get that out there right now. And that is one of the biggest reasons I didn't like it. Because of all the problems found footage movies have. There is scant time in a film to characterize and to give story and depth to the characters. And this movie squanders it, like most found footage films do, by giving reasons and excuses and sort of having to shoehorn an explanation as to why these people have these cameras all the time. It's really awkward. And that is the problem with found footage movies. Then you add to it the fact they have these storm chasers that are professionally trying to chase down the tornadoes. And of course they've got cameras. And I guess that works to a degree. But here's the problem with this. They break their own rules. There are many shots of this film that they're not even pretending are found shots. It's so like 70% of the movie is told through these cameras. And then I remember thinking, I'm like, well, then what's the point? If your whole point is to shoot everything from cameras and you spend all your time excusing that and having to give the reasons for that, even though that's stupid, you're spending the time to do that. And then half or probably about a third of the shots, especially the big money shots, aren't found footage. I'm like, well, then what's the point? Why didn't you just have these people dealing with the storm that way? Why are you squandering all your characterization and story time explaining stuff that's been explained and stupidly shoehorned in every single found footage movie that we've ever seen? Why are you retreading that old, stupid, boring, just diseased ground when you're not even following your own rules? This is interesting because this year we had Earth to Echo come out around 4th of July. And the big difference with found footage movies this year for like the summer is they're now trying to apply that formula to the big blockbusters, and it doesn't work. It barely works for horror movies because a horror movie is a little more intimate and they're supposed to be about the people in there. But the problem is the film is just, it's just not very good. Because they're spending so much time worrying about found footage that they can't tell a story and they don't even give us good characters. So ultimately, good try, New Line Cinema, and you did have some neat shots, but ultimately, this is not a good movie. Into the Storm sucks.
It sucks.
Alright, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the film After and some box office and DVDs. Kevin Carr and Fat Guys at the Movies wrapping up the show for you. We've got a little bit more to talk about. You actually heard a couple music cues. The last one going into the last break was Doctor Who. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, that's really a TV show more than anything else. They've had some movies and in-theater events, but it was sort of a Fathom event. And, of course, coming up with the new Doctor played by Peter Capaldi, they're going to be doing a Fathom event for that. And my sons have just gotten into watching it. I watched Doctor Who back in the 70s with Tom Baker. And I was a huge fan. And I remember I tried to introduce them to the old 70s stuff. But, of course, you know, it's very dated. So when they were younger, they liked it a little bit, but they never totally got into it. This summer, my oldest son went crazy into Doctor Who. He binge-watched the new episodes pretty much from when they rebooted it in 2005 on. And this weekend, instead of spending our time seeing a lot of terrible movies that are in the theaters right now, we are doing a Whoviathon. We're doing a marathon of Doctor Who episodes and content, and we're having a lot of fun with that. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/KevinCarr, and facebook.com/FatGuysAtTheMovies to see sort of the things we're doing. We have a lot of fun with these things. And it's just fun to experience the movies and television shows that I grew up with and I loved and are now being rebooted and finding out that my kids, of course, enjoy them as well. And like I said, that's actually a better way to spend your time than going to the theaters this weekend in some ways. You know, I mean, still theaters are fun and Guardians of the Galaxy is still out there, which of course you heard Hooked on a Feeling coming into the segment, of course, comes from Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it comes from Blued Swede from a long time ago, but it's made famous again by Guardians of the Galaxy. What's funny is I do a lot of radio interviews where I call into stations around the country and we'll do a little bit of a radio hit on Friday mornings and talk about the new movies and I'll review them. And I always find it funny. There's always tends to be hosts who don't understand that I have no control over whether or not a movie's good or not. And they're kind of like, oh, you didn't like anything. I'm like, there's no good movies out. The best one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that's, eh. It's sort of like getting mad at the weatherman when there's bad weather. The weatherman doesn't make the weather. The weatherman just reports the weather. And film critics, we don't make the movies. We just respond to the movies. And if Hollywood's churning out substandard movies at this particular week, there's not a whole lot I can do about it. I always find that funny when there are hosts who kind of seem disappointed with me when I don't like the movies that are being offered this weekend. So yeah, people got to realize I don't have any control over whether these movies are good or not. So let's talk about another movie that's opening this weekend. It's opening very limited. I think it's just in New York and LA, and it's on video on demand, and that is After. I think it expands to a couple theaters as the weeks progress, but we're getting a jump on it since you can catch it out on VOD. After is a story in which a family struggles to keep their sanity in the wake of a family tragedy, dealing with intense interpersonal drama.
You can't take on the burden of running the...
So what do you want me to do about it, Molly, huh? You want me to dump my family?
What's wrong?
Nothing.
I need to do something. I am losing my mind here.
No! No! Enough! I don't know what's going on between the two of you, but I've had enough!
I've dedicated every moment of my life to this family without complaint.
As I watched this film, the takeaway I had is it reminded me a lot of August Osage County. I mean, they don't have the powerhouse cast that August Osage County did with like Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts and Benedict Cumberbatch and, you know, Ewan McGregor. I mean, that was a huge cast for August Osage County. This one, the real notable cast member is Kathleen Quinlan. But this one, it's a family drama, and it is a family that is in pain and is suffering and is trying to deal with stress and tragedy in their life. And I'm just going to honestly say to you, that's not something that always attracts me. There's also sort of like a, I'm going to dance around the subject matter, but even though the trailer hints at this family tragedy, they're very vague on it because there's a bit of a reveal at a certain point. And it can be a little predictable, but you kind of hit the ground running and you don't know what's going on. And the whole movie leads to what really is causing the hurt and pain in this family. It's an interesting film in the sense that if you like watching families fight, I personally get enough of that you know, at like Christmas and New Year's and Easter. So I don't need to watch movies to watch families get at each other's throats. I've seen plenty of that happen on my own. But if that's the kind of thing you like, you probably will enjoy this one. It has certain relationships that are, some of them are a little trite. Some of them we've seen before, and it's got decent acting in it. But overall, the characters are just okay. And while I think there is a certain audience for this, I'm not that audience. So I'm going to give it the kind of sucks review, but still, it might be worth checking out if you like family interpersonal drama and conflict.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, you know what's interesting is I really undersold Guardians of the Galaxy. I loved the movie and I thought it was great, but I was terrified it wasn't going to be a phenomenon. It turned out that it is. And that's great. I think that's awesome because I think Guardians of the Galaxy is a fantastic, fun movie. It's not Firefly, people. I do get irritated when people are saying, oh, it's just like Firefly. No, it's not. You know how I can tell you for sure it's definitely not Firefly? Because I hated Firefly. Yes, I am that one guy who is a science fiction geek who did not like Firefly. I think it has a little more resembling Star Wars than Firefly. But even then, it's kind of a unique story. It has archetypes in it, but it still is its own story. But I remember going into this saying, well, you know, it's not going to necessarily do Iron Man numbers, but it doesn't have to. The reality is it did do Iron Man numbers. I projected a pretty low, but kind of like on what a lot of people were saying, 65 million for it. It ended up making 94 million over the weekend, which is phenomenal. So those, even though that's not quite at Iron Man numbers and ticket sales are different because the first Iron Man was not 3D and that was what, 6 years ago. So we have inflation to deal with. But it's still, that's pretty close to Iron Man numbers. That's really impressive for August 1st. It's a record-breaking thing, but not just by a little bit. The last record was The Bourne Ultimatum at 69 million. This thing, like, bested it by 50% or something. It's a fantastic number. And right now, it's outpacing the performance of Captain America, and it's holding better than Transformers 4. By the end of this weekend, it will have surpassed Transformers 4 in its day-by-day take because Transformers 4 really fell off fast. But this one's going to do well. This could be a $300 million movie. Who knows? If not, it's definitely going to be a $250, and it's going to be contending against Captain America the Lego Movie for the biggest movie of 2014 until Hunger Games: Mockingjay comes out. So yeah, great. Great performance for Guardians of the Galaxy. Everything fell behind it. Get On Up did okay. It wasn't a huge, massive hit, but it wasn't a failure. I don't think they're expecting it to be do too well because it was just counter-programming in many ways. This week, I think what's going to happen is it's going to be a horse race between Guardians of the Galaxy and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think that Guardians of the Galaxy is going to win simply because it's holding better, and I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, while it has a certain amount of buzz and it has the nostalgia factor for certain segments of our population, I also know a lot of people that aren't fans of Megan Fox, and I know a lot of people who aren't particularly happy about what they've done with the characters and how they've changed it, and they don't have a whole lot of faith in it. So I think actually Guardians of the Galaxy is going to win with 44 million. All right, with that sound, that means it is time to jump into the world-famous DVD roundup. Just a handful of films to talk about this week. There is, of course, Need for Speed, which is the DreamWorks film, which it's notable and likable because it uses practical effects. It's not a CGI movie. It's trying to be another Fast and Furious taking off from a video game standpoint, but Aaron Paul just isn't a good star for this. Still cool car chases. Like, it's the step up of car movies. It has cool car scenes, but outside of that, the story's dumb. Divergent is also out on DVD. I did not like this movie. I don't think it's going to be the phenomenon that Hunger Games, it already isn't a phenomenon, and I don't think it's going to continue. And then Perry Mason Movie Collection Volume 3. If you're a fan of sort of cheesy 80s and 90s TV, the old Perry Mason TV movies are available. And what's neat about them is the bevy of guest stars in it. People like Tim Reed and Vanessa Williams and Angela Bass and Jerry Orbach and Robert Vaughn and Robert Culp. They have a whole bunch of these people that you just see sort of slumming it in guest appearances in the 90s. And you forget how very 80s the 90s were when it came to television. There's also 12 O'Clock Boys about skateboarding. out from Oscilloscope. I'm going to say the stinker is God's Not Dead, simply because I just found that to be such... I actually haven't seen it. I'm doing it sight unseen. But it seemed like such an aggressively obnoxious straw man argument, just from the title alone. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Expendables 3 and The Giver and Let's Be Cops. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.